We have been talking this month about emergence, about how things and ideas come into being or sometimes spring into being, much like those crocuses and those tulips that we're finally seeing, and about what we can do to nurture this process. We talked about how wisdom can come from unexpected places, arising out of the words of those we might not think to listen to. We talked about how common purpose can emerge out of community who are each doing their own work toward wholeness. And we talked about how an environmental ethic can emerge from a practice of paying attention to the natural processes happening around us. Today I want to share a little bit about what I've seen happen when we simply listen to each other, when we pay attention to the processes happening between us. A crucial part of this is creating a place for it to happen. Most of us don't just wander into any place and tell our deepest stories. In fact, I have found that many of us don't even complete the telling of our stories until we've had enough time and encouragement to kind of feel our way into telling them. Rumi implies in his poem that we have to be completely naked in order to be awoken to each other. That's a metaphor. The process of coming to wholeness as humans cannot be fully engaged without witness. It's only when we've heard that it's only when we are heard that we find ourselves going deep enough to tell fuller stories. This is one of the reasons we gather in the small group ministry we call covenant groups here at REEB, to listen to each other's thoughts and to listen those thoughts into being. In those groups, we practice finding inspiration for the expression of our true selves through centering in the words of others, and then sitting quietly together until a member of the group finds their own words to express something about their experience. And here's the key. We listen in silence when they're done speaking, without thinking about how we'll respond, because we're actually asked to hold our responses until later, to not be in conversation with each other so much as to simply practice listening so that what is in there has room to come out. This doesn't feel in any way comfortable at first. It's hard both to do what we think of as nothing but just sit and listen, and hard to speak things that are real and meaningful to us into that silence. But eventually, because we create a covenant together that helps us hold each other accountable for what we say and do, and because we get used to the process of slowing down and waiting in silence until we or someone else has something to say, we find that what we share will be heard, accepted, appreciated, and trust begins to emerge. Once that happens, it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle. The more trust is built over time, the deeper each of us dives into our own thoughts, and the more we're able to articulate into that space that we create between us. This is part of developing a practice of caring for each other, and it's a practice that I think we need desperately in our world. Every single person in this room has a story that led them to this moment. We carry the impacts of that story into every room, every space we inhabit, everything we do, and whether or how we're aware of it, and whether or how we tell it, it guides every interaction, every perception, every relationship we build. And so, whether or how we hear each other's stories impacts how we respond to them. There are many stories we're just starting to be on the cusp of hearing, stories that have been silenced for some or all of our history together as a nation. My daughter participated in O'Keeffe Middle School's observance of the National Day of Silence last week, in which students held silence throughout the day in solidarity with people whose voices have been silenced in our society. So she and a small crew of classmates prepared and gave away ribbons on safety pins of all different colors that represented populations of people who have been understood now as having had no or little voice. Black people, women, veterans, Native Americans, other people of color, refugees, immigrants, GLBTQ people. And they even gave away these pink ribbons to represent groups they hadn't specifically identified in an effort to make sure that nobody was left out. She says this created an awareness of the existence of these groups among her peers and an understanding that something is missing in society when there are people left out of the collective conversation. So the ability and the support to tell our stories is a privilege that not all people in our country have. There have been these huge gulfs of silence, for example, around women and trans people who have been harassed and assaulted or ignored or killed. There's been such shame around being a victim or siding with a victim in sexual crimes. Such internalization of blame and such perpetuation of the classic roles that have been part of our history, that it has taken way more strength and courage than it should for women and trans victims and allies to speak up about crimes that have been committed against their bodies and their spirits. The Me Too movement has started to give them courage to dissolve the shame imposed on them, as well as the power assumed by perpetrators, and speak into the silence that this power dynamic had perpetuated. Black Lives Matter has been the result of black people's refusal to stay complicit in the power dynamic that favors white people at their expense, to disrupt the silence imposed on them during slavery and perpetuated through segregation and Jim Crow and mass incarceration and extrajudicial killing by police. The New Sanctuary Movement has been a way to lift up the struggles imposed on immigrants in this country to very loudly and very publicly refuse to continue to allow silencing. The Poor People's Campaign, led by William Barber, a revival of Martin Luther King's 1968 March on Washington for Economic Justice. It's a fusion movement whose goal is to challenge systemic racism in all corners, to challenge poverty, to challenge the war economy, to challenge environmental devastation, to challenge our nation's very moral fiber, in Reverend Barber's words. Every meeting I've attended for the Poor People's Campaign begins with people telling their stories, and it ends in the emergence of ever more committed leaders and workers. And you've heard me in this space talk about the Promise and the Practice Campaign, which is still going on, which our congregations are invited to contribute toward an effort that will bring funding to the Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism. This is also a story about making space for voices who have been silenced, because holding back funding 50 years ago took away a path toward empowerment and toward fulfillment in our faith tradition for black folks. And it ended the contributions of many of those folks to this faith tradition because so many of them left in their disappointment. There are so many people in these stories and so many other stories that could derail what we call progress, or who could make the people comprising the dominant culture uncomfortable. And these movements and these efforts to lift up those stories are just the beginning of what I hope is a sweep of the pendulum towards the side of inclusion and fairness. I think, too, about lots of the programming that I have gone to, and lots of programming that I've heard people go to over at UW, about all these other populations that have been marginalized in our times, the Japanese internment camps, the Native American stories, and all these others. So for Rumi, love is a metaphor for the divine. His plea for nakedness sounds to me like an appeal for allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, open to the possibility of experiencing divine love. Not studying divine love, right? Not the theology. He's very clear that we are just trying to understand the divine. It's not the same as feeling it. We are here to feel this love, he writes about, pulling us like a river. In my understanding of the divine as energy that moves among and between us, that can best be experienced when we're in intentional relationship with each other. And this means letting ourselves be open with each other, giving each other the chance to move into that space we open when we offer to listen or to witness. There's a Native American proverb that says, "Teach me the facts and I'll learn. Teach me the truth and I'll believe. But tell me a story and it will live in my heart forever." Our stories are what make us real to each other, whether they are light and enjoyable or heavy and difficult to hear or anywhere in between. And when we're real to each other, we're less likely to dehumanize or marginalize and more likely to allow space for that trust to emerge. You might recall that the main reason for the not so long ago success of the Right to Marry movement for gay and lesbian people in Minnesota was a door-to-door campaign of people telling their stories or the stories of their loved ones who were impacted by the withholding of that right. Compassion in shared humanity emerged from the experience of hearing those stories, and it guided voters to side with equality when that time came to vote. So following that thread, I want to offer a poem that was written by Alfred Lamott. "You want me to give up my story so that you can tell yours. I want you to give up your story so that I can tell mine. What if we both give up our stories to hear the waves of silence grinding our skulls into sparkling sand? To hear the glassy chime of 7 trillion stars in the boundless heart. What if we drown together in the catastrophic emptiness of love? What if we truly listen?" And so I ask you, what would it allow in to practice listening? Unlike the poet, I don't think we need to give up our stories, at least not permanently. I think just giving up our attachment to telling them at the expense of hearing those of others is what's needed. It takes a willingness to be still, silent, and allow time for the stories to emerge. We know how to do that. May we continue to learn to feel this love and to truly listen to each other in the ways that we're alike, to those among and around us who hold different understandings, and to those among and around us who have been silenced in the name of creating and maintaining our very culture. May it be so. May we be so.